Welcome to Washington Today for January 31st, 2022. I'm Gary Sterikoff. Thanks a lot for listening today. Here are some headlines. Tensions between Russia and the U.S. over Moscow's troop buildup near its border with Ukraine spilled into the United Nations Security Council today. We'll hear from both the Russian ambassador and U.S. ambassador Linda Thomas-Greenfield coming up. British Prime Minister Boris Johnson has apologized after it was revealed that a string of parties were held at 10 Downing Street at the height of the UK's COVID-19 lockdowns. We'll hear from the Prime Minister and opposition party leader Keir Starmer coming up. The FDA has given its full approval to Moderna's COVID-19 vaccine, known as Spikevax, to people 18 years and older. The move comes as the 7-day rolling average for COVID-19 deaths in the U.S. reached more than 2,200 last week. That's higher than last year's Delta surge peak, which was set in September. And a bipartisan group of governors said today that the country needs to start, quote, move away from the pandemic. The words came after a White House meeting between President Biden and the nation's governors following this weekend's annual meeting of the National Governors Association. We begin today at the United Nations Security Council, where U.S. and Russian officials exchanged harsh words about the Russian troop buildup on its border with Ukraine. The back and forth came as Moscow lost an attempt to hold the session behind closed doors. Here's Russian Ambassador Vasily Nebenzia.
We frequently refuted, often consistently refuted. Furthermore, the open format for discussion proposed by the U.S. on this extremely sensitive topic is making this a classic example of megaphone diplomacy and working in public, for the public, rather. There's a need to review this, and we've all stated this frequently. We do not think that this will help to bring this council together. Rather, we fully understand that the desire of our American colleagues to whip up hysterics regarding its own situations, regarding the proposed, the so-called Russian act of aggression, is something that they want to do, including within the Security Council from this rostrum. Our Security Council colleagues are being put in an extremely difficult position. This is of great harm, this hysterica, to Ukraine itself. The president of which, as we've seen, has asked Western countries a few days ago not to whip up hysterics regarding the deployment of Russian troops near the border, since this all harms the Ukrainian economy. We do not need this panic, said President Zelensky. Rather, this is needed for those people who believe in the myth of the Russian aggression. The Ukrainian officials have talked about a lack of a threat from Russia. In particular, this pertains to the Minister of Defense, the President himself, Mr. Zelensky, who have said themselves that they do not see in this activity that we are being talked about today as a threat. We are prepared to disseminate this to you later.
The meeting marked a public face-off between the U.S. and Russia following weeks of diplomacy. Here's U.S. Ambassador Linda Thomas-Greenfield.
Let's be clear about the facts. Russia has assembled a massive military force of more than 100,000 troops along Ukraine's border. These are combat forces and special forces prepared to conduct offensive actions into Ukraine. This is the largest, hear me clearly, mobilization of troops in Europe in decades. And as we speak, Russia is sending even more forces and arms to join them. Russia has already used more than 2,000 rail cars to move troops and weaponry from across Russia to the Ukrainian border. Russia has also moved nearly 5,000 troops into Belarus with short-range ballistic missiles, special forces, and anti-aircraft batteries. We've seen evidence that Russia intends to expand that presence to more than 30,000 troops near the Belarus-Ukraine border, less than 2 hours north of Kyiv by early February. In addition to military activity, we've also seen a dramatic spike in cyber attacks on Ukraine in recent weeks. Russian military and intelligence services are spreading disinformation through state-owned media and proxy sites, and they are attempting without any factual basis to paint Ukraine and Western countries as the aggressors to fabricate a pretext for attack. Russia's military buildup on the border has been paired with extensive new demands and aggressive rhetoric. This is an escalation and a pattern of aggression that we've seen from Russia again and again.
President Biden said in a statement that today's meeting was, quote, a critical step in rallying the world to speak out in one voice. Here's more from the U.S. ambassador.
You've heard from our Russian colleagues that we're calling for this meeting to make you all feel uncomfortable. Imagine how uncomfortable you would be if you had 100,000 troops sitting on your border in the way that these troops are sitting on the border with Ukraine. For us, this is about peace and security. It's about honoring the UN Charter that calls on us as members of the Security Council to protect peace and security. So this is not about antics. It's not about rhetoric. It's not about U.S. and Russia. What this is about is the peace and security of one of our member states.
And Ukraine, which is not a Security Council member but was invited to speak, urged Russia to respect its, quote, sovereign rights. Here's Ambassador Sergei Kitslyka.
The Russian side that they do not intend to launch a war against my country. Although one should rather speak about to launch a new phase of the Russian aggression. It is a very important message, as we still lack credible explanations by Russia of its actions and military movements. Based on experience, we cannot believe Russian declarations, but only practical moves on withdrawal of troops from the border. Madam President, Ukraine strongly rejects any attempt to use the threat of force as an instrument of pressure to make Ukraine and our partners accept illegitimate demands. There is no room for compromise on principal issues. The most principal position for Ukraine is that we have inherent sovereign right to choose our own security arrangements, including treaties of alliance, which cannot be questioned by Russia. Moreover, this right is enshrined in many international legal instruments that Russia itself a party to. Ukraine will not bow to threats aimed at weakening Ukraine, undermining its economic and financial stability, and inciting public frustration. This will not happen, and the Kremlin must remember that Ukraine is ready to defend itself. At the same time, we support the need to keep diplomatic channels with Russia open.
Russia has repeatedly denied that it intends to attack, but among its demands are a commitment from NATO and the U.S. that Ukraine will never join the alliance. NATO General Secretary Jens Stoltenberg talked about the situation.
Mr. Secretary General, I want to start with the situation near the border. Over the last 48 hours, have you and NATO seen any increases in Russian forces? And do you think, based on any intelligence precursors that you're seeing, that preparations for an attack are imminent, that they're moving things that they would need to use in a hurry?
What we see is that the buildup continues with more and more combated troops, with artillery, with armored vehicles, with more ammunition, with more fuel and supplies. We also see that they are now starting to move into an increased Russian presence in Belarus. We see where they also will have planes and helicopters. So all of this together, of course, makes the warning time shorter and shorter. So we need to be prepared. There is a real risk for a new Russian invasion or some form of aggressive action against Ukraine. But at the same time, there's no certainty, and we continue to work for a political solution. Russia has a choice either to engage in a political dialogue with NATO and NATO allies or to choose a confrontation. It's up to them.
NATO General Secretary Jens Stoltenberg speaking with The Washington Post's David Ignatius. And late this afternoon, President Biden adding more to this situation. He spoke to the media from the Oval Office during a bilateral meeting with the Emir of Qatar.
I had a productive talk last week with President Zelensky, and we continue to engage in nonstop diplomacy and to de-escalate tensions and attempt like the devil to improve security for our allies and partners and for all of Europe, for that matter. And today, in the United Nations, we've laid out the full nature of Russia's threat to Ukraine's sovereignty and the territorial integrity of Ukraine, as well as the core tenets of a rule-based international order. And we continue to urge diplomacy as the best way forward. But with Russia's continuing its buildup of its forces around Ukraine, we are ready no matter what happens.
President Biden speaking late this afternoon to reporters from the Oval Office. While today's UN session didn't yield any results, more talks between Secretary of State Antony Blinken and Russian Foreign Minister Sergei Lavrov are scheduled for Tuesday. You can see the entire UN session at cspan.org and on our C-SPAN Now video app. You're listening to Washington Today. Welcome back to Washington Today. Here are some more headlines. At least six historically black colleges and universities said they received bomb threats early Monday morning. The schools include Bowie State University in Maryland, Southern University in Louisiana, Bethune-Cookman in Florida, Albany State in Georgia, Howard University here in D.C., and Delaware State University. Howard University officials said D.C. and campus police responded to a bomb threat around 4:30 a.m. on Monday. No threats were found and an all clear was given. And Maryland State Fire Marshal officials said its bomb squads units were assisting Bowie State officials with building sweeps at its campus just outside of D.C. Monday marked the second time this month that multiple HBCUs have received bomb threats. CNN is reporting that Vice President Kamala Harris was within several yards of a pipe bomb that was placed outside Democratic Party headquarters on January 6, 2021. Sources told the network that the then vice president-elect's motorcade traveled into a parking garage that was in close proximity to where authorities found a pipe bomb. The vice president reportedly stayed in the building for almost 2 hours before she was evacuated that day. Of course, this happened just hours before a mob of pro-Trump supporters attacked the Capitol in an effort to stop the Electoral College vote for the 2020 presidential election. A pipe bomb was also found that day near Republican National Committee headquarters. Authorities are still looking for the person responsible. And Canadian Prime Minister Justin Trudeau announced that he has tested positive for COVID-19. Two of his three school-aged children have also tested positive. The family has been isolating at an undisclosed location as protests continue in Ottawa over COVID-19 health restrictions. The Prime Minister, who is fully vaccinated and boosted, said he's, quote, feeling fine and I'll continue to work remotely this week while following public health guidelines. Everyone, please get vaccinated and get boosted. In London today, British Prime Minister Boris Johnson apologized after it was revealed that a string of parties were held at 10 Downing Street at the height of the UK's COVID-19 lockdowns. The Prime Minister's apology comes following the publication of an internal report by civil servant Sue Gray that showed that 16 separate gatherings took place at Downing Street while the UK population was under lockdown. The report blamed a failure of leadership for the parties, which included two events held the day before Prince Philip's funeral. Here's Prime Minister Johnson speaking in the House of Commons earlier today.
Thank you very much, Mr. Speaker. Mr. Speaker, with your permission, I would like to make a statement. And first, I want to express my
deepest gratitude to Sue Gray and all the people who have contributed to this report, which I have placed in the library of this House and which the government has published in full today for everyone to read. I will address its findings in this statement, but firstly, I want to say sorry. And I'm sorry for the things we simply didn't get right, and also sorry for the way that this matter has been handled. And it's no use saying that this or that was within the rules, and it's no use saying that people were working hard. This pandemic was hard for everyone. We asked people across this country to make the most extraordinary sacrifices, not to meet loved ones, not to visit relatives before they died. And I understand the anger that people feel. But, Mr. Speaker, it isn't enough to say sorry. This is a moment when we must look at ourselves in the mirror and we must learn. And while the Metropolitan Police must yet complete their investigation, and that means there are no details of specific events in Sue Gray's report, I, of course, accept Sue Gray's general findings in full. And above all, her recommendation that we must learn from these events and act now. With respect to the events under police investigation, she says, and I quote, "No conclusions should be drawn or inferences made from this other than it is now for the police to consider the relevant material in relation to those incidents." But more broadly, she finds that there is significant learning to be drawn from these events, which must be addressed immediately across government. This does not need to wait for the police investigations to be concluded. That is why we are making changes now to the way Downing Street and the Cabinet Office run, so that we can get on with the job that I was elected to do, Mr. Speaker, and the job that this government was elected to do.
British police are investigating at least 12 events, including two that Prime Minister Johnson attended and a third held in his private residence that he previously said did not happen. Also speaking today was opposition and Labour Party leader Keir Starmer.
The Prime Minister took us all for fools. He held people sacrificing contempt. He showed himself unfit for office. His desperate denials since he was exposed have only made matters worse. Rather than come clean, every step of the way, he's insulted the public's intelligence. And now he's finally fallen back on his usual excuse. It's everybody's fault but his. They go, he stays. Even now, he is hiding behind a police investigation into criminality, into his home and his office. Mr. Speaker, he gleefully treats what should be a mark of shame as a welcome shield. But, Prime Minister, the British public aren't fools. They never believed a word of it. They think the Prime Minister should do the decent thing and resign. Of course he won't, because he is a man without shame. And just as he has done throughout his life, he's damaged everyone and everything around him along the way. His colleagues have spent weeks defending the indefensible, touring the TV studios, parroting his absurd denials, degrading themselves and their offices. Fraying the bond of trust between the government.
Oh, order. The member for South Ribble is my neighbour. I expect better from my neighbours. Keir Starmer.
Fraying the bond of trust between the government and the public, eroding our democracy and the rule of law. Margaret Thatcher once said, "The first duty of government is to uphold the law. If it tries to bob and weave and duck around that duty when it's inconvenient, then so will the governed."
British Labour Party leader Keir Starmer speaking on the floor of the House of Commons earlier today. Prime Minister Johnson, despite his apology, is still facing calls to resign from a number of members. You can see today's session at cspan.org. It's also on our C-SPAN Now video app. The House and Senate are back on Capitol Hill this week following a district work period. The Senate returned today to consider several of President Biden's judicial and executive nominees. They include University of Pennsylvania President Amy Gutman to serve as U.S. Ambassador to Germany and Rita Jo Lewis to be president of the Export-Import Bank. On the other side of the Capitol, the House will be back at 2 p.m. Eastern time tomorrow, with votes later in the week on bills to bolster American research and development to better compete with China and aid the semiconductor chip industry. Members are also expected to vote to end forced arbitration agreements for sexual assault and harassment survivors in the workplace. And some members are calling out former President Trump's statement from this weekend, where he once again attacked former Vice President Mike Pence for refusing to stop Congress's certification of the 2020 election. In his statement, Mr. Trump continued to falsely claim that the former vice president had the power to stop the counting, saying, quote, "Unfortunately, he didn't exercise that power. He could have overturned the election." In Twitter posts today, January 6th committee Republicans Liz Cheney of Wyoming and Adam Kinzinger of Illinois both called out the former president. Representative Kinzinger called the statement, quote, "an admission and a massively un-American statement. It is time for every Republican leader to pick a side, Trump or the Constitution. There is no middle on defending our nation anymore." Representative Cheney added that, quote, "Trump uses language he knows caused the January 6th violence, suggests he'd pardon the January 6th defendants, some of whom have been charged with seditious conspiracy, threatens prosecutors, and admits he was attempting to overturn the election. He'd do it all again if given the chance." Over on the Senate side, Vermont Democrat Patrick Leahy, who is a member of the Senate Judiciary Committee, also talked about the former president's statement.
"Madam President, we're a nation of laws. We're not a nation of individuals. We're a nation of laws. And we survive as a nation and we excel as a nation if we follow the law, if all of us do. On the Senate floor, we can debate both parties. We can disagree on things, and we do often. But I think we all believe in the fact that you have, once the law is passed, you must follow it. When I was a prosecutor, I felt if somebody broke the law, there were consequences for it. I cannot imagine what it would have been like as a young prosecutor if I heard somebody running for high office in my state, in this case governor, who said, go ahead and break every law you can to help me get elected because I'll pardon you as soon as I get in there. I think I'd be before a grand jury pretty quickly talking about that candidate. And yet that's what we see. I mean, how can anybody be so blinded to what this nation is that they'll ignore what this nation is? How can anybody be so blinded to the laws of this country that they can ignore those laws? How can anybody be so blinded to our Constitution they can ask people to violate the Constitution, commit crimes in my name? And don't worry, I'll take care of you. I'll make sure you're pardoned. Madam President, this country's got to get back, Republicans and Democrats alike, believing in the rule of law. Disagree if we want, disagree at the ballot box, but follow the law. And stop giving the impression to the rest of the world that we're some kind of a pending dictatorship where the law and the Constitution are set aside to the whim of whomever is elected."
Vermont Democratic Senator Patrick Leahy earlier today on the Senate floor. The words today come as a congressional effort to reform the 1887 Electoral Count Act is picking up momentum on Capitol Hill. A bipartisan group of senators met last week to discuss changes to the statute, which outlines how the Electoral College results are counted. You're listening to Washington Today.
Paul Kane is not only the senior congressional reporter for The Washington Post, serves as a columnist for that publication. I want to point viewers to a story taking a look at something you describe, at least in the headline, called the E word and what it means for those on Capitol Hill, particularly as they're debating going back and forth on funding the government. Can you start from there? What do you mean by this E word?
The E word, they used to be called earmarks back in the day. These are very narrow, individually tailored projects that members of Congress would insert into the annual funding bills. They would sometimes be for something as small as a local interchange, a highway stop area. You would basically be looking for sometimes as little as $100,000, $75,000, sometimes more, sometimes into the millions. And these were projects that were sort of the bread and butter of what members would be able to say that they had delivered for their constituents back home. The problem was in the late 90s and the early aughts, it sort of became an explosion of earmarks, and earmarks became a politicized thing where congressional leadership would look at those members of Congress who were in the toughest races and sort of steer the money to them. And then it was also about who raised the most money. And slowly but surely, the whole K Street lobbying community caught on and realized that one way that they could get more clients was to hire people, hire former staffers for specific members who were particularly good at procuring earmarks, hire staffers into their lobbying firms, and then they would then work to get clients who had connections to that lawmaker in order to get more earmarks. And pretty soon you just had this earmark explosion, and they were really, many of them were still very good and helping communities get through key issues that they needed funding for. And sometimes the bureaucracy just takes so long that the community needed instant help, and a member of Congress could do that. But then there were just some really bad earmarks that got in to these bills, basically through, in some cases, downright corruption, in which the lobbyists would be raising money from these clients who would then be giving gifts to the members themselves. And, more than a dozen lobbyists and federal agency representatives and a few lawmakers went to prison about 15, 16 years ago. And that led to the banning of earmarks. It just became a very distasteful thing, mostly led by Republicans and John Boehner and the Tea Party Republicans when they took over the majority in 2011. But also even Democrats like Barack Obama really didn't like the practice and thought it was corrupt. So that's why it ended, 10 years ago. But what people realized over the ensuing decade was that it really sort of devalued what a member of Congress was doing here. You reached a point where your average rank and file member of the House of Representatives really struggled to explain what they were doing in Washington. They had nothing to deliver for their constituents. And also it created this environment in which the members who used to always think that the government funding bills, which is the most basic duty of Congress every year, is to fund the government, keep it open, get those federal agencies the budgets they needed. That became a secondary or worse task for people. They didn't really care about it as much. They didn't have any skin in that game. And that is in part where you had a bipartisan special committee in the House in 2019 and 20 that concluded that one of the reasons there were so many of these government shutdowns that we've experienced, there were 17 or 18 days in 2013, 35 days across 2018 and 2019. There was a Democratic-driven one in early 2018. They said part of the reason we were having all of these government shutdowns is because members themselves didn't have this sort of real input into the budget. They didn't see any good of it coming out of it. So now the Democratic-led majorities in the House and Senate are trying to bring the practice back.
Washington Post reporter Paul Kane on today's Washington Journal. You can see more from today's program at cspan.org/WJ. Of course, the House is always live on C-SPAN, the Senate on C-SPAN 2. You can also see it at cspan.org and on our C-SPAN Now video app. If you missed any of this program, you can find it at cspan.org/podcasts or wherever you listen to podcasts. And if you'd like more on the stories that are shaping Washington delivered daily right to your inbox, you can subscribe to the C-SPAN's evening newsletter, word for word. Just go to cspan.org/connect to subscribe. I'm Gary Starikoff. Thanks a lot for listening today to Washington Today.